everyone, and welcome back to Labeled, a brand in the making. I'm Ariel.
And I'm John.
And today we're going to be talking about the new fashion shows that have emerged pre-fall 2021. My God, it's weird to say. I feel like 2020 is like embedded in our brains now.
Exactly. And I think it's a good time to kind of talk about this because, as you know, the state of fashion is kind of changing now, especially with what's been going on in the United States. So I feel like this is a good opportunity to talk about what's new in fashion and what's to come when it in terms of political fashion, if there's a hint there for y'all to kind of guess what we're going to talk about after this. But we wanted to talk about the new collections for pre-fall 2021 and, you know, just be very, you know, fun, light. I know last couple episodes we talked about business and things like that. I'm sure y'all are probably like, this is so much information. But now we're going to do a little bit of like light, fun stuff. So, Ariel, if you want to take the floor, what was the number one collection that you liked from the pre-fall 2021 season?
Oh, Dior. I love Dior. Their use of colors. I'm a sucker for color. So anybody who uses color or prints, like, I love it. Like, no words. But I feel like Dior was cool because it was like a mixture of Dior and Dolce & Gabbana if they had a baby. I don't know if you felt the same way, but just the use of cheetah print and colors. And did they do some, I'm trying to think of the other thing, mix match.
Yeah. I will say I like one of the looks, they have like a translucent material made out of like a coat or something, but it had their logo monogram like printed all over that, which I thought was really, really cool. And they also have the same thing with their hats. Like the hats were like made up like a translucent material with their monogram logo printed all over their hat. It was pretty cool. I actually really liked it. I like how it was very different. It was very, very, very different than what they're like used to doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you still had that classic Dior, but they were definitely targeting a younger audience with that, with the Polaroids too.
Exactly. And do you think that's going to be like the norm now with these brands? I mean, I feel like it's been like that, but I feel like it's more obvious that these historic brands, these ultra luxury brands, are kind of like catering to like the millennial Gen Z customer. Do you feel like that's going to be like the new thing or the new generation? Or do you feel like it's just kind of like it's a coincidence that they have more of like a younger look and feel?
It's always been like that. I mean, especially in the 90s, Chanel would do stuff like that. I mean, they made like a bikini Chanel top. I mean, they had the little mini skirts with a chain around your waist. I mean, it's always been like that. They'll always try to slip in some really young like fashions.
Mm-hmm. I found that pretty cool though. I actually really liked the collection because at first I was kind of like, Dior, I don't know. It's been, for the past couple of seasons, it's been like wishy-washy for me, like, oh, up and down, up and down. But after seeing this, I was just like, okay, like, it was so vibrant, so many vibrant colors, very fun, very definitely, like you said, it's targeting a specific audience or a different audience, but still has their codes, their signatures that are recognizable. So I definitely enjoyed that collection and enjoyed just like looking at it and looking at the images. I think they had like a live stream too, or like a video or something, but I didn't get to watch it. Did you watch it?
No.
But if you guys are on Vogue Runway, go on there, look at it, watch it. Definitely, I feel like it's a good collection. And it was one of my favorites. Because I'm comparing it to like Chanel, you know what I mean? Did you see the Chanel pre-fall?
Chanel, I just can't. It's the same thing over and over again. And I honestly, when I was looking at the collection, I don't understand how it went together.
So, okay. I agree. But I will say that I feel like that collection, the Chanel pre-fall collection, looked pretty... It was very elegant, very much their signatures, but I really liked how like diverse it was. Like it just seemed very functional, in my opinion. It was the same silhouette, same styles, but like very functional and very youthful You know what I mean? And like, it just seemed very luxurious compared to other seasons where I felt like they were just using, I felt like there was nothing to it. Like last year in their resort collection, it was so bad. Like, so bad. Like, I did not like the resort. Even their fall, I think their fall collection, I wasn't really interested in either. But I feel like this one, I don't know. I really enjoyed looking at it. Maybe because I saw the runway. Mm-hmm. And they did like a no audience runway. The only audience was there was what's her name? Kristen Stewart?
Yeah.
The actress. I watched it and I was just like, dang, this is actually really cool. I actually really enjoyed it. But I mean, hey, I mean, maybe I like the experience more than I like the clothes. And you're like, oh, I'm looking at the clothes. I like the clothes. I don't like the clothes, but I like the experience. You know, maybe that's kind of how it was.
I feel like instead of Kristen Stewart, they should have done the top. Customer and did the whole thing for her or him or whomever. But I think that would have been so much cooler.
I get why they put Kristen Stewart there, because she is the face of Chanel at the moment. And they have multiple faces. They have, I know it's Johnny Depp's daughter who, what's her name? Lily Rose Depp.
Yeah.
That's her name. And she's kind of like the face of the Gen Z customers. And then, you know, Kristen Stewart, she's more of like the millennial. And I think they have her as like in all campaigns, especially in beauty and all these other stuff. Mm-hmm. So I get why they had her there, because they wanted to kind of reinforce that. And she's a friend of the designer. So I get it. But I think me personally, she's a good fit for the brand, but I feel like they should have picked someone else as a representative, maybe someone of color. Just putting it out there.
Did you notice that none of the runway shows, like after fall, it all went back to white models? I mean, there's some diversity here and there, but I was like, this is looking like it used to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nothing has changed. It was not even like a diverse mix. Like I can literally count the amount of like colored models on one hand, like black models. There were some Asian models, because obviously the Asian community the Asian community buys this product and they're trying to get to that diverse customer as well. But I feel like there are black women and maybe men that shop there too. So maybe they would want to have a diverse set of models to kind of have that representation. Now, the efforts there, which I like that they put that much effort into representing that, but I feel like it was very far few than there should be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, especially when they're talking about size inclusivity and there's just mm-hmm. one size in every collection that I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. I mean, maybe fall they'll do something different, because usually that's when they do their runway for pre-fall. It's usually there's no runway show for that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
I mean, it's Chanel, and even with Dior, I don't even think they're not going to change. They still going to stay the same, unless there's like a radical new, like young, bright designer that's willing to take the initiative to actually go to that level. If none of the designers are even thinking about that, and they know they're going to make money regardless, they're not going to change. It's just going to stay the same way that it is. And which is fine, but don't try to be a part of the culture when you're not trying to be the change of the culture. That's just my opinion. So Dior, your first brand, that was what you loved.
Mm-hmm.
So for my first brand, and we're gonna list out three brands that we each enjoyed from the season, just to kind of give you an idea of like where we are when it comes to like our interests and when it comes to the fashion and all that stuff. So one of my brands, or one of the brands that I truly, truly enjoyed, was this new up and coming, I think they started in 2016, designer. The brand is called La Double J. Don't know what it means or what it stands for or why it's named that way, but I just started following them maybe like a few seasons ago. And I just love how their collection is fully prints. It's like psychedelic, very 70s, very
retro
prints. I think also they have like, they use a lot of those, like, you know, those, like if you go to like Europe or somewhere where it's like, you see those little like pots and pans that are like, have those unique printed like look. I don't know how to explain it very well, but it's very like vintage prints, if that makes sense. Like very, I don't even know how to explain it, but it's something where, like, if you look at a, like, if you go to a mom and pop shops, like those porcelain cups that has those unique prints on them, like those blue and whites, like China prints and things like that. Those types of prints, but it has more of like a vibrancy where there's more color instead of it just being white and blue, but it has those little printed patterns on that. That's what I'm kind of referencing when it comes to the clothes, because a lot of the clothes have those different psychedelics, very vibrant pinks, very vibrant like reds, even like greens. Now, I will say it was very muted in a sense, so it wasn't like too neon, but it was still kind of like a mixture in the middle.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed. And I also love the fabric. It looked like they were using maybe like some jacquard fabrics, maybe some silks. Some looked like crepe silks or even like, taffeta. So like I truly enjoyed it for the collection and just the fabrication, the inspiration behind it. But I think me following the brand and knowing what they're about made me really enjoy it even more. And I think they did have a black mold. If I'm not mistaken.
I was paying attention to the clothes.
You're just paying attention to the clothes?
Yeah. I love the prints. I'm a sucker for prints, especially when they do like the whole look in the same print. It's so much fun for me.
And I think what's so cool about it is because, like, they're using all the same prints but in different silhouettes, which I feel like is very sustainable in a sense, because I think they had maybe two or three printed fabrics in different fabrications, and they used that to kind of create the entire collection. So, like, one print was used to make a top, a dress, maybe some pants or something else in their collection. Another print was used to make just the dresses maybe. So that type of way of like creating their collection is pretty cool, because it's not like they're buying all bunches of fabric just to create an entire collection, because they know like in these times, things are uncertain still, especially in fashion. So they want to be very cautious of how much waste that they're using, I'm sure. So that was pretty cool that they were able to do that.
And then what John means by this, in case you're unaware, that when designers buy fabric, they usually have a minimum quantity order. Quantity order. So like, I know when I'm buying prints, I have to buy at least 50 yards. So it's better to use it for multiple garments to not waste all that fabric.
Mm-hmm. So there are also some manufacturers or even like fabric manufacturers, they have like a sampling minimum quantity order, which is like maybe 10. But if you're in a way, that's only if you have like a relationship with them. So that varies from manufacturer to manufacturer, because some of them will be like, well, we don't have a relationship with you, so you're gonna have to buy the 50 orders. And if you're just a new, or the 50 quantities. So if you're a new brand that really likes the fabric and you want to buy it, it could eat up into your budget too. So that could be a crazy thing.
Yeah, I understand that, because a lot of my stuff is custom, so I had to buy the minimum amount.
Wait to ask how much that all costs, because that's a lot. I remember when I was doing mine, I was just like, I just need the sampling yardage, which is 10. And they were like, okay, we could work something out. And then we ended up working something out, which was great. But I still had to go meet them halfway. So if they were 50 yards, I told them, they were like, okay, well, can you do 20 yards? And I'm like, fine, I guess that works. Yeah. So, and then what is your second favorite?
So I liked the Brock collection. I thought it was really cool. Mm-hmm. I just liked the silhouettes, how it looked kind of like effortless, but yet still, I haven't seen Bridgerton yet, but I know I need to watch it, but it somehow reminded me of it just from the trailer of watching it. I haven't seen Bridgerton yet. I just haven't been in that mindset yet to watch like a period piece. So I'm watching Scrubs. I know. I go through
Scrubs. Oh yeah, that okay. I was like, Scrubs. Wait, what?
The only medical show I can watch because it's a comedy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, I love their colors, their prints. I didn't care for their lookbook. That's the one thing I didn't like. I understand designers are trying to do something different right now because they can't do runway shows. But the lookbooks this season for pre-fall were weird.
Yeah, it was very constructed. Like it was black and white, right? Or something like that.
No, it was like as if it was for an editorial, like that you see in like Vogue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. But I just want to see the looks.
Yeah.
That's what I was hoping for in this lookbook. Or if you wanted to do kind of that editorial shoot and then have the lookbook after it, that would be cool. But a lot of these were getting a little too artsy-fartsy for me, and I just wanted to see the clothes. But yeah, that would be the only thing that I'm, like, bad about it. But I love the florals, I love the colors, and I like the silhouettes. I think it was cool.
Yeah, no, I like the collection. Brock Collection is not one of my top favorite brands at the moment, but, like, it is a beautiful collection. It's very much, they're very much like, let's say Erdem had a long-lost sister, that's Brock Collection. Because a lot of their clothes are very much similar to like the period pieces that you saw on Bridgerton. Now, I've seen Bridgerton. I haven't seen the last episode, but I've seen it. It's a good show. Good. Interesting. You know, good-looking people on the show. What do you expect? And the fashion was very period piecey, I will say. Very, very period. Like, I would not be surprised if Erdem, the designer, actually created the entire wardrobe for that show, because Erdem is kind of like that's his thing. That period, like, you know, high fashion, high society woman back in the 1500s, whenever that, or maybe not 1500s, like 1800s, whenever that's placed in, whatever period that show is placed in, that's his way of showcasing fashion, but in a modern take, which I found very, very interesting. But I will say, Brock Collection kind of like has that as well, but they're a lot more
ethereal.
They're a lot more ethereal. Like with Erdem, it's very like to the point, straight, and like doesn't have that fantasy storytelling. I will say Brock Collection has that fantastical like storytelling to kind of add to why this collection is made the way that it is.
I mean, if I had a look from that collection, I would be frolicking in the gardens in my summer home in England. And
we could all wish for that.
You know, instead of sweatpants and on my couch.
Okay, listen, like, looking at the collection, I did see a bit of like I couldn't imagine the women wearing it today just because of like where we are in terms of the world, but there probably is some women that are actually like living that life, that fantasy that Brock was trying to like portray, and they're just kind of capturing that, like showing that they're shoppers that way.
Well, this is showing after coronavirus, because we're all going to get the vaccine this year, and this will come out later this year.
True.
And then
it will come out between May and July.
So this is kind of like the segue from sweatpants to almost normal clothes. This is
We'll see.
Gonna
we'll
be
see
by myself actually with this, but yeah. I'd be like, what are you wearing?
No, we'll see. We'll see if that's what people are actually gonna wear. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's a beautiful. I think what they do as a brand, it's very, it's unique to them, and it's very couture techniques, but still, but not as like it's like all handmade, like how couture normally is. It's very demi couture, like it's accessible. Not in the price point, but accessible in case you want to buy it at a department store or wherever. But I like it. I think it's beautiful. I think it's a good stepping stone, or a good like escapism for people who are looking to think or wanting to like think of what to wear after this whole coronavirus pandemic situation kind of ends.
Now, what was your second favorite?
My second favorite was Burberry. Oh my goodness. No, okay, so let me preface this. I don't normally like the mainstream brands. Like, I like Dior, even though I love Dior, I still have my criticisms. Chanel, still have my criticisms. Prada, always black, never any other color. Maybe they have some prints, but never any other type of like vibrant color. Like all these like legacy brands, these top designer brands, I never really like, or like, I like them, but I'm just like, they're not my top favorite. Burberry, after looking at this collection, I was just like, dang. There was nothing else that really compared this. So I just have to say this because it was a beautiful collection, honestly. Like before this new designer, Riccardo Tisci, kind of took the helm of this brand, it was just very boring, very blah. Like it was cute stuff. And I love the trench coats, but I feel like that's all that they were selling. Just the trench coats. They wanted people to buy the trench coats. The handbags weren't doing anything. The shoes weren't, they were blah. Like the collection back in 2014, from like 2000, I want to say from like 2010 up to 2000, I want to say 17, it was just blah. It was nothing. There was just nothing great about it. Like it was cool, but it didn't stick it out for me. When Riccardo Tisci kind of came in from Givenchy, he revamped the brand. He changed it, made it more aspirational to our demographic, to the millennials, to the Gen Zs, even maybe the baby boomers. But, and then he changed the handbags. He kind of made it more trendy. You know, you can look, if you see the handbags are kind of similar to what every other designer is doing with their handbag collections. But I feel like with this pre-fall collection, he added a bit more color and a bit more print. I loved how, one, all the models were of color. So maybe there was one model that was like a white or like some type of ambiguous race. But for the most part, all the models were of color. He used camels, he used pinks, he used blacks, whites. Like he used all types of color for the collection in terms of like materials and fabrics and stuff like that to make it stand out. And I just really liked how cool and avant-garde, but still classic it all looked. I used to work at Burberry, so they have these different segments for the collections usually. They call it the boy and the girl and the lady and the gentleman. So you would know like which one's like the boy and the girl, meaning it's more so for like the Gen Z customers. It's very sporty, athletic, very athleisure or street style. And then the more like tailored pieces, the longer gowns, the dresses, those are like the lady and the gentleman. So that's how they kind of classified everything in terms of like where the collection stands. And now they're kind of like mixing it and melding it all together to make it one cohesive look or one cohesive collection. And they had both men and women in this pre-fall look. The men was mostly for fall, winter 2021. And then the women is pre-fall. And then I think they're going to do a fall, winter 2021, 2022 for women in the coming months. I think in like March or something. But I will say this collection was just like, I was looking at it and I was just like, dang, like it looked amazing to me. Like I was just so inspired in terms of just like, you know, the colorways, the color matching, the use of models that he was using, just even like the posing and the stance. It was very designer contemporary, where it's like you stand in one direction and the other model standing the other direction, and just kind of creates this like really unique pattern in a sense. But yeah. I will say it was very, 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 I just loved it. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. This was actually like my favorite of all the seasons, I would say, from them at least.
I like their spring summer collection that we talked about the last and the first podcast. Oh my goodness. But I felt like at the end when they did the floral prints, it felt a very Alexander McQueen to me. I don't know why, mm-hmm. but that mm-hmm. was the feeling I was getting from the last couple pieces.
I feel like everything with like Pat, like Prince and like Flora Prince and stuff like that is very Alexander McQueen, especially if you're doing it in such a statuesque way, because Alexander McQueen was known for that, or is known for that in terms of like as a brand, and even having that androgynous feel, like you would think, like you'll come to your mind like, oh, this is kind of a Alexander McQueen, like Lee Alexander, like this is his thing, this is what he's normally used to doing. But now I think a lot of designers are kind of liking that, and they're doing it and implementing it into their own aesthetic. But I will say a lot of the pieces from the collection that you, from that, the season that you like, the spring, summer 2021, were embedded in the pre-fall collection. Like the first look was like this really camel, like beautiful camel jumpsuit, which was in the spring, summer 21 collection. But it was green. It was like an olive green color, I believe. So a lot of the silhouettes and the designs and all that stuff are embedded in this, from spring, summer 2021, is embedded in pre-fall. So I think, I mean, I enjoyed it. I liked it. I really just loved how everything was just like presented, how it was packaged. You know what I mean? And it kind of told a story. I don't know what that story is, but it told a story.
It did. It did tell a story. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love the use of prints in it. And I liked how they made it not monochromatic, but they just mix the same print together. I love that look. I hope that stays. I really do. I really like that.
I hope so too. I want it to be, I feel like it should be their signature. I feel like sometimes these brands, they want to like test the realm or test the stratosphere or whatever, just to kind of do something different and new, because customers or shoppers want newness and difference and all that, which I get it. You have to be new. You have to be relevant going in. But sometimes just sticking to what you're used to is always the bread and butter. Like Diamond Furstenberg, like, the wrap dress is always going to be there. It's always going to be in their collections. It's never going to go away. And she's making millions off of just that one silhouette, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy.
Just to show you, if you have a good idea,
stick to it.
Use and abuse it. Yes.
Use and abuse it. There you go. Use and abuse it. Because it works. If it works for you, why cut it out? Why try to go against the grain and be something and try something new when something's already working for you? You know what I mean? And I feel like that should be a lesson to like all designers. If you have something that's like unique to your collection, just stick with it. And maybe have different colorways, have different, I don't know, have it into prints or have it into like a monochromatic color or whatever the case may be, but still have that same silhouette if it works for you.
I always feel like that's a bad idea. Usually when you have a good idea, they always say there's always room for improvement. Especially in design, because I know BCBG would do that. They would have a great seller, best seller, and all they would keep doing is bringing that back in a new colorway, and then, you know, they went bankrupt. So,
But you could always, you can improve it. There's some room for improvement on some of these brands. Yes, you can improve it. Maybe if it's a signature wrap dress, right? Yeah. Maybe if it's long, maybe make it shorter or whatever the case may be. Like whatever you feel like will make it still have that same silhouette that you're looking into, but change it a little bit just to kind of show diversity for your customers. I feel like that's fine too. But I also feel like having a different color in that specific silhouette and just reworking it, I don't think it won't necessarily put you in bankrupt. Also have other designs that people can choose from and not just have that, but still, like, if this is working for you and you have multiple different colors in this particular item, I feel like, why not? You know what I mean? I feel like it would sell. A woman could have it in, like, I'm just gonna give you a reference for this. When we were working at Neiman Marcus, there was a customer that was a regular customer for me. She would buy the same silhouette or even sometimes the same dress in three different colors all the time. So like if it was one of her favorite brands was Rebecca Taylor, she would buy the same silhouette or the same dresses from Rebecca Taylor. She would buy two dresses in the same style, same size, just because in case she lost the other one, she would have this one. Or she would buy if Rebecca Taylor had a similar silhouette, but in two different colors, she would buy four of those, which I thought was crazy. But she says, if it works for me and if slims my frame, my body frame, and I look cute in it, why not buy it in multiple times or in multiple colors? And I was just like, hey, there are customers out there that do that. So, you know, why not?
It's true.
Yeah.
But on to the third.
Yes. What is your third designer brand that you like?
Even though you said you kind of like trash talked it, but I love European designers, and that's always going to be like my top choice for everything. I'm like a sucker. I mean, until a new designer can catch my eye, but they haven't. So until my collection. No, I'm just kidding. But my third one was Etro. I love Etro. I love their use of prints. And I know sometimes it can be a little bit bohemian. But I mean, I pick and choose pieces from their collection to work into my style. And there was this one robe that they made for men. Mm. And it was like long white background with this floral print.
Yeah, no, that was a beautiful look. I actually was like, dang, like I would definitely, as a guy, I would wear that since it is made for men. So
I
would buy that.
It'd probably look awful because I have absolutely no shoulders. I would need to get that taken in. But.
Yeah, the great thing about what these brands are doing now is like they're making things more accessible for all genders. So while it may be made for men, like that coat or that robe may be made for men, they could definitely change it up and make it for women too. Women can wear it. And I really like how fashion is kind of transitioning to that, this androgynistic, I don't know, looks. Like, I just really like how they're kind of changing things and women are kind of taking more chances into wearing something that's not necessarily created specifically for them, but they can wear it themselves if they wanted to.
And it looked very feminine.
It was made for men. It was made for men.
Are they sure?
I mean, hey. Style. Listen, if it was made for women, they would have put it on a female model right away. I'm just saying. But definitely you can wear it. You can definitely wear it.
Yeah.
If I buy it, you can share it with me if you want.
I would not return it. But
okay. So you hear that? She's trying to steal from me.
I'm not trying to steal from you. I would borrow and then you give it back when I die.
Isn't that the same thing as stealing though?
No. Because it would be given back to you.
Okay, but what if I die before you?
Mine. Finders keepers, right?
You guys listen to this? Do you listen to this? Okay, all right. We'll leave it at that. But no, I think I really like the collection from Etro because I think they are sticking to what they're used to. They are sticking to their the paisley prints, they're like bohemian looks, just very very earthy and very like grounded, which I enjoy. I like how a lot of it was like a mixture of like silks, cashmeres, wools, maybe some like cottons and stuff like that. It was just kind of like a mixture of like different fabrics and their signature prints and what they're normally creating. So it was a beautiful, I honestly really enjoyed it. I will say the last season was my favorite because of just like the animal print that they had going on. It was not like an animal print, but it was like something very similar to an animal print, but like made into their own print. Maybe that's why I liked it the most. I think this one was just very like, it was cool and unique and organic, but I think I liked the last seasons more than I like this one. But it's still beautiful.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, the issue was it was harder to find three top designers, I think, for pre-fall. There was a lot of prints being used this season, which I loved. Mm-hmm. But
it was all kind of the same, in a sense.
Yeah. Or I feel like designers are really taking coronavirus into consideration and doling down their looks because we're used to, like, sweatpants and stuff. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't excite me. It's like, okay, that's kind of what I see all day.
Yeah, I think one of the things that they're coining in right now is kind of like this like stealth luxury type trend where it's very luxurious in terms of like fabrics and all that stuff, but it's very minimal. It's not as extravagant as it used to be or as we are used to seeing prior to coronavirus. And I think it's a good thing that, I mean, okay. It's a good thing, it's a bad thing, because the shoppers that are used to buying more extravagant pieces now have the option to buy those calmed down, less extravagant pieces, but still maybe have like a lower price point, or maybe still has that luxury sensibility that they're seeking, or that tailorship that they're seeking when trying to dress for home or for home at work or for whatever, yeah. Or work at home, sorry. But I like that idea, but I also think it's bad, because I feel like when we do get out of this, it's not gonna be easily transitionable. Like, it's gonna be hard to kind of transition out of that mindset or that, you know, that way of dressing when we're out of this pandemic. So.
Well, the last pandemic that we had, we had the Roaring Twenties afterwards. So I feel like that's just what's gonna happen after this. Everyone's gonna wanna get dressed up. And they're not gonna wanna wear these boring things. And they're gonna want fun, vibrant, all these prints that all the other designers are doing for pre-fall. And
right.
Go out with a bang. First right. time seeing friends.
But I still think some of these looks can sometimes, depending on how you are as a, you know, in terms of like your style and everything like that, transitions to more of like an upscale, like going out look. It just seems like some of these designers are kind of taking it very literal to a like, oh, we're looking for at home style. What can we wear at home that's easily I'm able to really put it on without having to like try to find something new or try to buy something new, but like, you know what I mean? Like, how can it be easy for me to wear this at home instead of looking like I'm ready to go out on a regular basis, but still, if they wanted to dress it up a little bit, they have the functionality to do so.
Yeah. But I feel like they need to get out of this mindset, especially for fall. Like, they need to instill hope. Like, I am so hopeful that we are going to get out of this soon and I can wear all this stuff and not only wear it to the grocery store. This is just depressing. Like, come on.
We'll just have to wait and see. Because I agree with you. I think, and even some brands are doing that. Like, even Christian Siriano, he had a collection of maybe just, I think, 10 looks. And it was all like couture designs. And I was just like, excuse, we are in a pandemic. Who the heck is wearing this? I was just like, what?
Yes.
Who is wearing it? But then he's not thinking of the pandemic as a long-term thing. He's thinking of it as a short-term, and he knows his customers, when they get to the point where they're gonna wear something to go out to, he has these collections, he has this lookbook, he can show it to them, they can buy from it. And I'm sure people are actually buying from it, because, you know, people are doing smaller gatherings and smaller, like, you know, special moments, like small wedding receptions or even like whatever you're doing that's, you know, COVID friendly. Well, not COVID friendly as in like you want COVID to come in, but friendly as in like you're staying safe.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say. But I'm sure, he has a smaller collection to kind of show to his customers who are going, still, you know, doing little events that are like friendly and safe and stuff like that for them to wear. Makes sense. But I still feel like the people who don't have those types of events or are not going out, they may want to still support him through this time and wear something that's more comfortable to wear at home. You know what I mean?
You don't wear ball gowns at home?
I mean, for like an hour, and then I'm gonna put it back in my closet. What am I gonna wear? Literally wear it all day. There was actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because there was a video, I think it was like a campaign that Vogue was doing like a few seasons ago, where I can't remember if it was Kendall Jenner or if it was some other model, where basically they were wearing couture to go to a grocery store. A couture Jean Baptiste Valley dress, poofy pink tulle dress, with like a high low like train.
Yeah, I love that.
And literally she was wearing it in her Paris apartment, you know, looking all bored. This was like before the pandemic. This was like maybe 2008. She went to the grocery store and was grocery shopping at, in Paris, in Couture. And I was just like, ugh. I mean, she looked amazing. I can't remember if it was Kendall Jenner or someone else. The model looked amazing. But I was just like, what was the point of this? What was the point of it? You know what I mean? Why not? But I mean, I can't see myself wearing like a huge ballroom gown just for nothing. It's going to get dirty and you have to dry clean it too.
You need to get out of that mindset. Like finally today, I was getting out of the mindset of wearing sweats and doing makeup and my hair. Well, we had this podcast, so I had to do it. But like I went to drop off lunch at my boyfriend at work because he left it here. And I got all dressed up. I was putting on like a cardigan. I fit in my pants that I bought a year ago because, you know, you're like me, you kind of gain a little bit of weight for COVID.
Right.
Sitting on your ass all day. But they finally fit. They were long, like flare pants. I had to put on my heels and I was going out. I was like, yeah. I mean, only to drop off lunch. And then I was like, well, I'm dressed.
Right.
Fabulous. So I went to my parents to go sit down and just chat with them. I was like, you know.
All dressed up and dolled with full face of makeup, hair did, nails done, everything, just to go drop lunch for your boyfriend and to see your parents.
Yes. We just need to get out of that mindset. We can do it. We can do it.
I mean, we surely can. I'm so here for it. But a ball gown.
Well, I know.
Couture. One, how's it going to fit in your car? How are you going to fit in your car working with that?
You have a driver. Did you see her drive in the video? No.
No, I didn't. She probably did have a driver.
But anyways, what was your third favorite?
Okay, my third and final one was Nina Ricci. Too excited. Okay, so the reason why I love Nina Ricci right now, one, they have two co-designers. One is a black designer and the other one is, I think, I don't know if that's his wife or his like friend or whatever, but she's like a young woman, which is, I like that. But I like how they're using the signatures that Nina Ricci was based on to kind of create it into what it looks like now. Right now it's very, very androgynous, or not androgynous, very, very avant-garde, very, a lot of cutouts. So they have a lot of like coats or a lot of like blazers, coats. What is the other ones? Like skirts and tops and things like that. They're all like cut out. Like the blazers or some have like little side cuts at the waist just to kind of show some skin. They are in very, very vibrant colors. They're all made in very like, you know, strong blues, maybe pink, like vibrant pinks, yellows, oranges, which is very, very cool, but all up against a chocolate dark skin model, which I find so very appealing. Like you have to look at you have to go onto VogueRunway.com, look at the collection, pre-fall 2021. You'll be mesmerized by how unique it looks. And they did this the last season too. They did something very, very similar to that because they were using an artistic way of doing things. So they were getting these references from this LA painter, I think, or LA photographer, a photographer from LA, I mean. And they were kind of restructuring the photo shoots to kind of look similar to that, or getting those references to make it look like that. So they were darkening this already chocolate brown woman's, not skin color, but like the exposure, and then lightening up the vibrance, the saturation of color in the coats and the dresses and things like that, just to make it very much more of like a painting, but still have that, I guess like artsy fartsy like feel. It was very unique. I really, really liked it. I really liked the representation of what they were trying to do in terms of like just marrying fashion and art, putting it all together, but still having this really cool, like very avant-garde collection that was not necessarily couture, which is what Nina Ricci's was. It's a couture brand, very, very old couture brand, which has been around since, I think went since Chanel kind of been around. It's been around for like over 100 years now, but they are kind of changing it into making it more millennials, for millennials. They're making it for millennials as well as for Gen Zs. And I just love just like the colors and the just how they're kind of transitioning it into more of like a relevant brand compared to like the other brands that have been around since when they started, when Ninoichi was first incepted back in the, I think, early 1900s or late 1800s, I believe. I mean, it's hard to kind of keep up with all of them, but I know it's probably like early, I think it's probably like early 1900s when it was first incepted. And now it's kind of like transitioned from that. Still using the same techniques, still using the same signatures, which is, I think they're the one that kind of started like the bias cut, or maybe it was, I think it was either Lanvin or Ninoichi was the one that did like the bias cut. And I would go into explaining that to you, but that's not the podcast that we're trying to go into right now.
I remember learning it in school. I just don't remember. That was so long ago.
Yeah, I believe it was Ninoichi. It was between Ninoichi and Lanvin. I believe so, because I know Lanvin had the same like dress formation into like that Grecian look, yeah, which is kind of similar to like the bias cut, but I don't know if Lanvin started it or if it was Ninoichi. One of those. They're both similar in terms of like aesthetic and look and things like that, in my opinion, but Lanvin has gone another direction while Ninoichi has gone another direction as well. But I really just liked that particular collection, and I just loved how just innovative it was. It's completely different than what we're used to seeing from them, or at least what I'm used to seeing from them. And I'm excited to see where it's gonna go as it grows and as these two young designers are like taking the helm of this historic brand. Did you like it?
I didn't care for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was all right.
Yeah. It's
like boring to me. I don't know why. Yeah.
I mean, why is it boring to you?
It seems like it was a lot of like power suits and mm-hmm. business. It seemed very for politics, like, because mm-hmm. they kind of dressed kind of boring, and it was just like a little step above that. That was just my opinion.
I get it, because because like I will say, like, it was hard to get used to this new way of them designing their collection, because I'm used to seeing their very, 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 very elegant dresses, very intricate details, the beadings, all that stuff. I'm used to them doing that. So when these new designers came in and kind of changed everything, you know, they brought in the bucket hats. They brought in a lot of these like trendy, like clothing or trendy silhouettes, but still has those like, you know, couture techniques added to them. Their coating, their coats, like, look really, really gorgeous, magnificent. But I get what you're saying. I get where you're coming from, because it was hard for me to kind of like get used to this look and get used to this new Ninoichi like ideal, because I'm used to like the way that it's been working. Like, just like you said, simple, cute. I think with what the designers are doing right now, it's very much like elevating the collection, or elevating the brand, because I feel like at that time, or even like when they were like ran by a different designer, I think his name was Guillaume Henry or whoever, I forget the name of the designer at the time, they were like kind of going more into like that elegance couture, like remaking those like simple silhouettes, like silk shirts, you know, really flowy dresses, like very just like unique looks, and really cool at the time. But I feel like the shopper, or even like the luxury customer, is kind of transitioning to something totally retro, or, you know, different. Mm-hmm. So I think with these two new designers, or with these two designers that have been with the brand since, I believe, 2018 or maybe 2017 or something like that, I like what they're doing with it. And it took me a while to kind of get used to it, because I was very much used to something completely different. But now I just like where it's going. And I can't wait to see what they're going to do down the line. So I don't know. I know you're not like, but was Ninoichi like one of those brands that you kind of like watch, especially when you were in school? Like, cause I know for me, when I was in school, like, we had to do research on all these like historic designer brands. When I was taking the history of fashion, one of the courses I was taking, we had to do a lot of the research on these brands. And, you know, it's Dior, Chanel, Nina Ricci, Lanvin, even Vionnet. Those were like the five historic brands that like some people talk about today. Unfortunately, Vionnet is not around anymore. It's, you know, I don't know what happened to it. They were showing collections up until, I want to say, 2015. Now they're not showing anything for it. I haven't heard anything of it. But we still have Lanvin, we still have Dior, we still have Chanel, we still have Nina Ricci that were like started back in the early 1900s. So that's where my love and interest came for these brands. But I feel like Nina Ricci has done more of like a 180 or a 360 yeah. in terms of just like changing their aesthetic as a brand, just to kind of change with what the time and what the customer is looking for when it comes to luxury goods.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember learning about her.
You don't? Yeah.
I don't know why.
What did they teach you? What did they learn? What did they teach you in terms of like those brands? Was it mostly like the Dior and the Chanel?
No, it was everyone. So like Frederick Worth, the very first mm-hmm. fashion designer. Charles something. I don't know why I'm spacing on the name. He was just featured at the Met, but like 5 years ago, he was at the Met. All of his dresses, he's no longer.
Charles James?
No, isn't that
the first American couture designer, that's him. That was Charles James, but I don't know.
Is it Charles James, or is that, I'm thinking of that makeup guy. He's coming to my mind, or is he James Charles?
Could be one of those.
Right? I feel like something's not right, but Charles something.
Charles something, either James Charles or Charles James, one of those.
Yes, and then the other one, Schiaparelli.
Oh, Schiaparelli.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Oh my God, I can't.
Schiaparelli, there was these, even like the ones that were like around in the World War, First World War, and then after came back around yeah. the Second World War, Millinooks or something like that, Mionnet or whatever, those brands. Those are like long gone. They're like, so you don't have to remember those. Those are,
I know there's some gone. That were long gone, and then they, I'm trying to think of who, I know we learned, see, I remember just the European designers, so Balenciaga.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Balenciaga, how they started was beautiful. How they are right now is just awful. To Balenciaga, but like.
I agree. I feel like their like accessories are like on point, but like their clothing, maybe some of their dresses, maybe, but I feel like their shoes and their handbags, top notch. I would buy, like, for sure. Love them.
I hate them all.
You would never buy Balenciaga?
No, I hate their bags. I've always hated those bags. And really? Those sock shoes that everyone's wearing.
Okay.
Yeah. But we're getting off topic. We're talking about what we learned in school. But anyways, that was pre-fall.
Yeah. Pre-fall. Those were the three collections that we thoroughly enjoyed from pre-fall. And I'm kind of excited to see what they do again for fall, winter.
Yeah.
I feel like... Do you feel like the fashion cycle is going back the way that it was again? Or do you think like it's changing still? Or do you think it's going back? I feel like it's going back because the fact that they did pre-fall and then in a few months they're going to do fall, winter. Then a few months after that they're going to do resort. And then a few months after that in September they're going to do spring, summer. I feel like the cycle of fashion is going back the way it was when we were fighting so hard to change the fashion cycle
it's changing though, because not every designer was doing it. There's a lot of designers who are missing in pre-fall, a lot.
That's true.
So, and then I know some designers are creating less looks.
Mm-hmm.
And
maybe like two or three, or maybe like, no, well, like 5 to 10 looks. Not two or three.
Yeah, and I know designers are going to try to become more sustainable. It'll happen. It's going to be slow because I know people are set in their ways, and I totally understand that.
Mm-hmm. So if you were doing something for so long, it's like, why do something totally different when you know you're going to make the money regardless?
Well, it would be hard. And again, I remember when I was in school and they were talking about, oh, be sustainable. I was like,
no, miss me with that mess.
It's like, because again, sustainability for some reason in my mind had a negative connotation. Like, but now I understand and I've done more research and I can better assess this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And maybe implement it into your own brand later on in your.
Well, I'm already started. It's just the.
Oh, wait. Process. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So yeah, those are the top three that we liked. And we also wanted to touch upon this as well. So what did you think of the fashion at the inauguration?
I liked Jill Biden's ensemble.
I knew it.
I love the blue. Mm-hmm. And I loved what Kamala Harris has been wearing, but I must say that purple jacket, even though everyone loves it, it for some reason to me, it looked very cheap. I don't know why.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say that, but like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let me get into it. So for those of you that are maybe hidden under a rock or something like that, on Wednesday, January 20th, we had our inauguration for our new president and vice president, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, which is historic to me because Kamala Harris is the first Black and female VP of the United States, which is a huge honor. Like,
not only is she
Black, she's a female. So it shows that there's, and it's so crazy because I was looking at a post, like an Instagram post the other day, where it showed all the vice presidents from, from like when America first was like, became this huge state up until now. And it was just all old white men. I was just like, oh my goodness. And then we have this little, like, young, beautiful, vibrant woman who is Black as our VP. And I'm just like, wow. Like, it changed so much when it comes to our democracy. Like, it changed so much when it comes to, like, what's going on in the world. But also, like, seeing how, one, these women and Black women at the inauguration were dressing and how powerful they all looked. Like, Michelle Obama, fabulous. Like,
she's always fabulous.
Like, she was wearing, I believe he's a Black designer. He looks Black to me, but like, you know, these racially ambiguous people, you never know what they are. But he was an up and coming designer named Sergio Hudson. She was wearing head to toe, Sergio Hudson. New designer, very, very brand new. And I'm like, okay, people are gonna start shopping for him. I was even looking at his line sheets the other day. I was like, can I stock his clothing in my store too? Cause I've never heard of him. I never heard of this designer until just rather once Michelle Obama was wearing him. And I think things like that, the fact that Michelle Obama and even like Kamala Harris, she was wearing an up and coming designer named Christopher John Rogers, which I love. I've been following him for like since he started. Like, I love his designs. I love his collections. Like, I even talked about him in our first podcast episode when we were listing out what we liked from spring. I think it was fall, winter, spring, summer collections of that season. Yeah. I think it was actually spring, summer, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mentioned him in that, and I've been following him since he started. So to see him elevate from where he was, winning the CFDA award 2 years in a row, and then being dressed by the first female VP of the United States, like, and she looked amazing. She was wearing that purple coat and dress that you did not like, Ariel.
I didn't. It like, I just feel like it didn't flatter her figure.
Okay.
It made her, I feel like, look bigger than she is. And I never once thought that she was a bigger woman. And for some reason, the way that those buttons hit at her waist, I didn't care for it.
So if she had worn it open, would you have liked it even more? Or do you think?
I still thought the fabric looked awful, but I mean, that's just me. But again, she always dresses so well. So it's just, it was just the perfect, I don't know why, but everyone else, like, Michelle Obama killed it.
Michelle
killed it.
She looked amazing. Like, and did you see how she was just walking as if she was walking a runway when she was going up to the, I was just like, okay, sis, you better. Like, she was looking so good in that outfit. Like, it was a top made by Sergio Hudson, a coat blazer made by Sergio Hudson, pants. I think those pants were made by Sergio Hudson, but in the lookbook from that season, it was a skirt, not a pant. Yeah. But still, regardless, she looked flawless. I even think Kamala Harris looked amazing in what she was wearing. Because normally I see her in just suits, black, you know, whatever. But I think seeing her in like this more colorful, more vibrant, feminine look, I think she looked amazing. I think she, for, you know, to have a woman in this powerful role, you know, taking care of the United States along with our president, obviously, like, she has to show a sense of femininity as well as show a sense of, like, I'm the head boss in charge, you know, well, not all the way, but, like, I'm second to best, you know what I mean? So, like, I have to kind of showcase, I have to kind of look a certain way, but I'm still showcasing how feminine I am. So the fact that she was wearing that purple garment, like, head to toe purple, and she was next to her husband, she looked amazing to me. And like, there was a photo of like Michelle Obama and Kamala Harris together in their like color schemes, and I think there was a photo of like Jill Biden, you know, Dr. Jill Biden, in her, like, I think it was like a light blue turquoise or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was just powerful women all together dressed to showcase, like, we're taking charge of the White House, you know, showing everyone that even though we are in this stage of like our democracy and like trying to like change things, we can still look fashionable and still look good. And they looked, all three of them looked amazing. And if you see like the grandkids of Joe Biden's, looked amazing.
It was just like an event.
It was an event. They came to slay.
And the performances, Lady Gaga. Not dress, but skirt and coat with the...
I think it was a dress. It was a dress.
No, outside. I think it was a coat and a skirt, if I remember reading about it.
It was Schiaparelli made it, right, I think?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I loved it, and her hair.
I love that, too. Yeah. I wasn't a fan of J-Lo's look.
Well, what was weird is in Women's Wear Daily, I was reading about it, and they said they wanted her look to be subtle, and I thought, your look has to be like $50,000. Those pants, we sold at Neiman Marcus, and for some reason, I'm getting like $9,000 in my head. I don't know if it's exactly that much or for the whole look with the matching black sequin top, but like, damn, it's just head to toe Chanel.
Yeah.
I feel like
that even with that look, it didn't really do much for me when it came to J-Lo. Like, I feel like I've seen her in that look numerous times again. It's just a different designer.
Yeah. And then Katy Perry.
Katy Perry, I actually liked her in her look. She needs to change her hair, though. I liked her more in black than I do in blonde. Hmm. Yeah.
But the best was Lady Gaga.
I mean, out of the performances and the celebrity appearances, yeah, Lady Gaga. But if Beyonce had gone, if she was there, I don't know. I don't know. But if she had gone, she would slay all of them. Just saying. Just want to let you all know. Because I'm for the Beehive. I'm here for the Beehive. And I just love Beyonce.
Okay. And the poet. I don't know the poet's name. I don't remember her name, but she was slaying it too in Prada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that fluorescent yellow. Yeah, no, she looked good. I just loved how uniquely, like, how color coordinated everyone was. I feel like Jill Biden, obviously, like that light blue color. Like, for her skin tone, I'm sure her eyes are blue. It'll pop up more. Like, for sure. Michelle Obama, because of her chocolate skin features, like this burgundy colored, like even vibrant burgundy colored look, like definitely perfect for her. Kamala Harris, caramel, light skin a little bit, purple, perfect. the poet in that vibrant yellow with her dark chocolate skin, it was just also coordinated very well to kind of match everyone's features. Even Jill, even Biden's grandkids, like, they were all coordinated very, very, very well. Like, they looked, I was amazing. Like, wait, these are his grandkids?
And then you saw her stepdaughter, Kamala Harris's stepdaughter, in the Miu Miu jacket.
Yes, yes.
And then the white collar.
Uh-huh. Amazing. Even her, like, her I think it was her niece who came with her daughter. Like, I would follow her niece, Mina Harris. Maya? Is it Maya or Mina?
I feel like it's Maya.
Maya? Okay. I follow her on Instagram because she has this, like, book coming out with everything and everything. She was dressed head to toe, too. She was in this green, like, very, like, emerald green, like, look. And I was just like, dang. They all really came to, they did not come to play. They were like, y'all gonna get this new democracy. Y'all gonna get it. It was just so beautiful.
Well, designers were fighting to dress them, too, because... It's hilarious because when Trump was president, anytime Melania Trump would wear a designer, they'd stay quiet. You wouldn't hear a peep from them. They're like, nope, nope, mm-hmm. nope. And then now it's like, please, please, please.
Right. Well, I mean, I ain't trying to get in trouble, but what is Melania going to do? What's she going to do wearing these designers? She ain't going, nobody likes them. So, I mean, I wouldn't blame them, but you can surely pay for it. If you want a dress, you could surely pay for it, but nah.
Hell no. I mean, if, like...
You wouldn't charge her if she wanted to just buy it, not give it to her for free?
Who? Melania. Hell no. She would have to buy it, or I'd just say no. I'd just block it. I'm sorry.
I feel the same way.
But if it was like Kamala or Michelle or Jill,
for free. take all my collections. Take it all.
Please. Name's Ariel Campbell. Just, you know.
Remember the name. Out there.
Yeah. I mean, women run business. Come on.
Okay. No, but listen. Like, I honestly, like, because Michelle, because Kamala wore these designers, like Christopher John Rogers and Sergio Hudson, they're blowing up. Like, I'm sure they have a lot more that they want to do in terms of, like, their careers and things like that. But because they were represented on such a huge platform, their career is skyrocketing.
It was like when Michelle Obama was dressed in Jason Wu at mm-hmm. Obama's inauguration.
First inauguration,
in 2008, and that's when his company blew up too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So when Kamala Harris runs for president after Biden,
oh yeah,
go hit me up.
Okay, you'll be locked and ready by then.
I got you.
Okay, listen, and she from California too. She from California. She knows. We from California. Listen, like, we from California, like. Come, Kamala, if you somehow, some way, by God's grace, listen to this podcast, reach out to either one of us. Ariel, obviously, because she's a woman and she, you know, she has a design company. But if you want to shop at my store, I got some looks that I know you're going to look great in. So hit me up. Just saying.
Or, you know, just hit us up.
Or just hit us up and we can figure it out.
We'd love to visit.
Yeah.
I would love to see the inside of the White House.
For real. Like, I honestly have never been to the White House. I've been to DC, but I've never been to the White House.
I've been to the outside of it where you look through, you know, the gates.
Mm-hmm. I've never been inside. I had the opportunity to actually go inside, but I don't know why I didn't take it. And this was when Obama was still in office.
What's wrong with you?
See, I wasn't thinking. I know. But now, and then all of a sudden, you know, Mr. Trump went into office and I didn't want to visit either way.
Well,
and now that bad energy is out, I'm ready. I'm willing to go back. You know, he got to sage that place first. Sage all the...
Did you see that? I think Diet Prada.
Yes. You know that? I did see that. That's why I referenced it. They got to sage that entire house. every crevice, every crack to get all that bad energy. But I'll definitely want to go visit and kind of just like see it now that there's much more peace going on in the world, especially after this
movie. Let's hope it stays. I really hope. There's a lot of things that America needs to fix.
Yeah.
A lot.
I agree. But I'm also hopeful that it will stay and a lot of things will change. I'm hopeful for that. Especially with fashion. There was this article that came out, will American fashion be aspirational again? Because it wasn't because of Trump being the president. And usually we get those aspirational fashions from significant figures like the First Lady. And now that we have a First Lady that we respect a lot more than the last First Lady, I feel like fashion's gonna be a lot more aspirational and a lot more, you know, people are gonna be looking towards how she's dressing and what she's dressing for. Even with Kamala Harris, because it's interesting how we have the First Lady who's in power, as well as, you know, her husband who has the ultimate power, and we have a female vice president who has some power as well, that is able to kind of dress a way that women are looked at to dress for, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that made sense, but it made sense. But no, I just feel like we can look at what Kamala Harris is dressing, and we can look for what Jill Biden's gonna be dressing, and kind of like see these two powerful women change the way fashion is done, or maybe even like in, you know, reinvent it or revamp it, or however way they're gonna do it. So yeah. It'll be cool to kind of see that together.
But on that note, we will end this podcast.
Yes, we will. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is our 13th episode.
13th. Oh, that's unlucky, but just, it's okay.
It's okay. Like, comment, share. Bye.
Bye.